From Milwaukee's NPR, this is Capital Notes. We break down the big political news affecting Wisconsin. I'm Ayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. He provides a roundup of the Wisconsin developments you need to know. Here's our latest conversation. Hi, J.R., welcome back to Capital Notes.
Thanks for having me.
Let's turn for a minute to the U.S. Senate race this year. We haven't talked about that a lot yet on Capital Notes. It's longtime Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin seeking re-election against Eric Hovde. He's a California/Utah businessman who was born and raised in Wisconsin. He may face some nominal August primary challenges. What do we need to know about this race?
Well, the big development recently was that Donald Trump endorsed Eric Hovde, called him a great guy, and gave him his full and complete endorsement, which isn't really a surprise, but it also creates this kind of dance that Republicans often do with Donald Trump, because there's no denying that Trump brings out a certain segment of the base unlike anybody else. He has a passionate following, and those folks, if you want them to support you, you need credibility, and Donald Trump provides that. The flip side is Trump has lost the suburbs, a lot of areas, not doing as well there as past Republicans, and the party has suffered because of it. And so how does Eric Hovde embrace that Trump endorsement and get that support from outstate that he needs, places like Western Wisconsin and Northern Wisconsin, where Trump is very popular, without losing support in the suburbs? We saw some evidence of how he's trying to create some distance between himself and Trump this past week. Examples, you know, he said he doesn't believe the election in 2020 was stolen. Trump continues to harp that theme, did in Green Bay during his rally. Hovde says, look, they thought there were problems, but no, it wasn't stolen. On abortion, he's tried to kind of navigate that issue by saying that he believes in life, but also believes that a woman should have a choice early on in her pregnancy. That's different from where he was back in 2012 when he ran for U.S. Senate and said he was totally opposed to abortion. So you're seeing kind of the pluses and minuses of the Trump endorsement and Hovde having to try to navigate that while also broadening the appeal that he has. Because you look at the polls and Donald Trump and Joe Biden, they're both kind of stuck in the mid-40s, maybe upper mid-40s, but that's not how it's going to play out in the Senate race. You know, we're probably going to have some third-party votes in the presidential race, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, Jill Stein, Cornel West, that might keep both Trump and Biden below 50%, but it's not going to be as crowded a ballot, we don't think, at least right now, in the Senate race. So if Trump's at 48%, just pulling a number out of thin air, how does Hovde get to 50 against Tammy Baldwin? He has to broaden that appeal, expand the number of people who are interested in him beyond what Donald Trump can offer, but also how do you do that without losing that hardcore MAGA base?
Well, looking at Hovde and Baldwin, can you kind of lay out for voters what they should know about the candidates, you know, in terms of where they stand on big issues? You've mentioned Hovde, abortion, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, Hovde ran in 2012. He's running again this year. He's toyed the idea of running for a number of elections over the years. Madison businessman, native of Wisconsin, being knocked by Democrats because he owns a bank in California, has a very nice home out there. He has staked out kind of things like immigration, the border, drugs coming across, fentanyl, kind of like the core. But basically, the issues that you're seeing really Trump talk about are the ones he's talking about, trying to bring the country together, solving healthcare, those kinds of things. Baldwin first ran for the county board in Dane County back in the 80s, I want to say, served in the assembly, went to the Congress, won the Senate seat in 2012 when she beat Tommy Thompson, easily won re-election in 2018. This race is a little bit different for her, though, because in 2018, she had an opponent who really didn't get off the ground post-primary, couldn't really raise money. Leah Vukmir is a state senator. She struggled that race. Hovde's got personal wealth, and we don't know how much, but he's going to put in the race. But we do know that his campaign says he raised at least $1 million from others the time he got in mid-February through the end of March. We will see exactly what he raised by mid-April when FEC reports are due. We know he's got close to $5 million up on the air so far, so we know he's put personal money in. Again, don't know how much for sure just yet, but that's there. Tammy Baldwin has been a pretty steady Democratic vote in her caucus. She has tried to play up her bipartisan credentials at times. One of her first ads talked about a law she pushed that was supported by both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. She's talked about Buy American quite a bit. She authored legislation to provide some legal protections for gay marriage. So, you know, she's been around for a long time, and that's something that Huffy's trying to use against her, that she's a career politician, in his words, and it's time for change, whereas Baldwin continues to sell her appeal that she's somebody gets things done for Wisconsin. She regularly shows up in all parts of the state touting Project X or Y that she got a grant for to help fund it, and tout that she's somebody who's bringing things home for the state.
And what kind of coalitions does Baldwin have, both like among voters and also organizations in the state, as well as what coalitions Hufty is looking to build?
You know, they're pretty Republican for Hufty, pretty Democratic for Baldwin. Again, she's trying to reach across the aisle and expand that coalition a bit. Talking about Donald Trump, one of her ads, you know, she does a pretty good job. People tell me when she goes out state that she talks up issues that aren't just, you know, traditional Democratic ones. She talks about ag, did a dairy tour last week. She tries to dive into those issues, goes up to Marinette and talks about the shipping contracts that the company up there, Marinette Marine, wins. I mean, she does those kinds of things. And Hovde is trying to, again, strike that balance of getting the Trump base excited for him while also trying to pull in traditional Republican voters who have kind of left the party a little bit because they're turned off by Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think, you know, recently Eric Hovde had an event in Milwaukee at Pepper Pot Restaurant with business leaders, and he said that that GOP candidates make a mistake when they don't try to compete in Milwaukee and Madison. What do you see there?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, then that message gets undercut because the Republican National Committee, now it's been kind of taken over by Trump allies, is doing things like closing a Hispanic outreach center. Now, the state party says it's still doing things, but it's a conflicting message. You know, you get this conflicting message from the party versus Trump when the party says, let's bank votes. Let's go out there and early vote to get these things, you know, turned in so we can focus on more casual Republican voters and help get them out. And then Donald Trump says, don't vote by mail. It's all fraud. So it's an interesting dynamic for them trying to navigate with him at the top of the ticket.
And in addition to, you know, touting grants that they get for various things happening in Wisconsin, what kinds of things does a Wisconsin U.S. senator impact on the average person in Wisconsin? Like what sort of impact would people see?
Well, good question, because Congress is kind of dysfunctional these days. They don't get a lot done except for these kind of ominous spending packages. So you do a lot of like votes on judicial nominations and appointments of various bodies and then try and do the sausage making of Congress and getting spending bills done. It's not glamorous work a lot of times, and it's hard to do to show like, hey, I got bills X, Y, and Z passed, because it's just so dysfunctional out there. But Baldwin regularly goes around and talks about, hey, these are the things that I brought home to Wisconsin. Ron Johnson, by the way, is not somebody who does that. He's not a big believer in earmarks or trying to land projects. That's not really things to be happening. He wants to cut spending, not really find ways to spend more money. It's an interesting difference in approach between the two of them to their jobs as U.S. senators.
And of course, the Wisconsin race between Baldwin and Hovde will be one of the most competitive and most important ones. Democrats want to keep the majority. Republicans want to flip it, right?
Yeah. You know, if you go around the map, I mean, obviously Republicans are going to look at, West Virginia is pretty much done. Joe Manchin is not going to run for election. Republicans already put that one, and Democrats, in the red column, that seat is gone. So then Republicans next focus on Ohio and Montana, both states that Trump won in 2020, should win again by healthy margin in 2024. It's not easy as a U.S. senator of the different party to win when the nominee for president from the opposing party wins. So that's a challenge. Then the map kind of gets interesting. Do you go to Pennsylvania with Bob Casey and his reelection bid, the open seat in Michigan? Do you go to Nevada, Jackie Rosen? But most of the seats I'm mentioning are Democratic ones. There aren't a lot of like pickup opportunities for Democrats. They're basically playing defense. And the question is, where will Wisconsin fit into that pecking order of resources? Where do Republicans like the best shots to flip seats? Don't forget, now we have Maryland on the map because former Governor Larry Hogan has announced he's going to run for U.S. Senate. Very popular former governor. Now, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, because you're talking about a federal race for U.S. Senate, but Democrats are going to have to spend money there to remind people that Larry Hogan, if he wins, would be a vote for possibly a Republican Senate majority and possibly a Trump White House. So, you know, just resources we allocate as we get closer to the fall and see where the pecking order is. And that's one thing that Hovde's going for him is he's got personal money. Now, again, he hasn't told me how much he's going to put in yet. Give us a round figure, but it's something that can help level the playing field because Tammy Baldwin had $8 million in the bank at the end of 2023. She's been a phenomenal fundraiser over the years. She has a national network to raise money from. So she's a formal opponent that way, and Hovde's checkbook might help level that playing field somewhat, although there's this interesting dynamic for self-funders where it seems the more you put in personally, the harder to get other people to give you money to run your campaign. So there's a balance he has to find in that regard as well.
So how worried are Democrats about losing this seat?
They're cautiously optimistic. They feel like Tammy Baldwin does the work once she gets up on the air in more meaningful ways and continues to hammer her issues. And people know more about Hovde that she'll be okay. But Republicans are at least optimistic. You know, people were kind of not even paying attention to this race a year ago. Like, oh, she won by so much in 2018. How's it going to be competitive? Well, that ignored the dynamic of that race. She had so much more money in 2018 than Leah Vukmir that she ran ads in the Wausau market in western Wisconsin in ways that Vukmir couldn't, ran up numbers there that no Democrat usually does. If it's a 50-50 presidential race, anything can happen in Wisconsin, and it goes in the Senate race. And that goes back to the question of between Baldwin and Hovde, who can best run ahead of the top of their ticket for president in November? That could be the key, is who's got more appeal beyond whatever hard ceiling they may face because of Joe Biden or Donald Trump.
You're tuned into Capital Notes. I'm Ayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross, editor of WizPolitics.com. So thanks for that information about the Senate race. It's also another week, another election gone by in Wisconsin. Voters narrowly passed two constitutional amendments brought by Republicans in the legislature, and now private funds can't be used to run elections. Can you tell us about this and what practical effect it'll have?
Republicans call them Zuckerbucks. Basically, back in 2020, it's all reaction to 2020, and there was a series of grants handed out to local governments in Wisconsin, about $10 million statewide to almost 200 communities by a group largely funded by Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder. Of that $10 million, though, like $8.8 million went to five cities, the largest in Wisconsin, all happened to vote fairly Democratic in elections. And Republicans cried foul that this was tilting the playing field toward Democrats. They felt like it was inappropriate. So you can't do that anymore. Now, the second question, restricting who can work on election, there's a little gray area there. There might have to be some legislation to clarify what that means. There have been all kinds of worries from various local election officials that, well, does this mean X, that somebody who's done this task for me for years no longer can do it? We'll see. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to try and tell you what the limits are going to be, but that's something to watch is where it goes. But again, all reaction to 2020. What was the
strategy behind trying to get that into the Constitution that only an election officials can run elections? Can you unpack that?
Sure. There was stories about Green Bay and a consultant who helped with the election administration up there. The Republicans feel like that person had a Democratic background and it was inappropriate, the role that he played in 2020, and they don't want to see that again. So that's why they passed that. And the reason it went to amendment was Governor Evers vetoed their attempts at reveal legislation. I mean, Governor Evers has now got close to 190 vetoes of bills since he became governor. That is a record in Wisconsin history, and Republicans have been stymied by him over and over again. So, okay, if we can't get it through the governor, we'll go to the constitutional amendment process, which requires passing it in two successive legislative sessions, then going to voters for a referendum, then doing it that way.
And so the disadvantage now is that there's more regulation, or people's hands are tied in some senses, potentially, in terms of who can help out with the election?
Potentially. Republicans have argued that these fears are overblown, that it's a red herring. But, you know, it's like anything. Until their courts weigh in, or, you know, there's trailer legislation to clarify things, there's going to be some questions that people are going to worry about what is and isn't allowed under the Constitution now with these restrictions.
And so getting back to the funding aspect, now that private funds can't be used to run elections, some election clerks have said that they only received a fraction of the federal dollars that they would need to pay for running their version, running the presidential election, and then they only get a fraction from local funds. Will there be increased supplemental sources of funding in Wisconsin, whether it's local or federal?
Excellent question. You know, it's one of the things that they may address in the budget next year. They do that every 2 years, set a budget. Will that be a debate in 2025? Possibly. So yeah, it's an open question about what they're going to do if they're going to address this dynamic now and put more money into it.
And what about for 2024? Are there any concerns and options for clerks that aren't getting the money that they need?
Unless the state ponies up or the federal government does, no, not right now. There's no way to go get private funds to cover public administrative costs for elections.
And so with Wisconsin's, what does Wisconsin's legislative cycle look like for the rest of the year before the November election, and could people get something done on this?
Oh, the legislature's adjourned. I mean, they can always come back in special session, but it doesn't look like they're going to. They ended the session in mid-March, basically, and went home to go campaign. So if it's going to be addressed, barring some kind of special move, it won't be addressed until 2025.
So what do you see as the consequences of municipalities and counties not having enough money to run elections?
It depends. You know, remember, the legislature disapproved a big boost in shared revenue, which is state aid to local governments. So there's more money coming in that regard. I'm not sure how much that could help. I can't tell you, like, community by community what's going to look like, but they've run them before, the thinking is, and they'll figure out a way to run them again. So until there's proven or a need that wins over Republican lawmakers, I don't know they're going to get any more money this year for election administrative costs.
And this Center for Tech and Civic Life, were they expecting, or do you know if it was expected that they would have provided money for 2024? And have any other states banned this type of action?
Sure. Other states have banned it. And I do know there's an example, like Madison got some private funding for some things. They knew this amendment was coming, went and spent the money beforehand. I've seen other local governments saying, hey, we were planning to apply for X or Y, but now we won't. So there'll be a real impact. And, it, you know, I'm not sure what it's going to do yet, though. It's hard to say until we get to election day what the turnout's going to look like, what the demands are going to be in local officials, and if there's going to be a significant factor or not.
All right. Well, thanks for that information. Finally, both Trump and Biden, you know, ended up getting more protest votes than they expected last week. What are your big takeaways from that presidential race?
And talking to operatives, they all felt like most of the voters will come home come November, in their words. Now the question is, what about the ones that don't? How many don't? So, no, it wasn't a great look for Donald Trump to be below 80% in a primary that was over, essentially. It's been over for weeks. He's secured enough delegates to win the nomination. And it was basically a protest vote. It's not a great look for Joe Biden to have 47,000 people say, we're sending you a message about your strategy toward Israel and Gaza and Palestine here because we are voting for uninstructed. You know, they can't afford to lose a lot of people. You remember, this state is razor thin all the time, the presidential race, except for 2008 and 2012. So they can't afford to lose a lot of people. Or if they do, they have to go find new ones. So like Joe Biden, can he go reach across to Nikki Haley voters and say, hey, they're not happy with Donald Trump, but maybe come over? Could they even be swayed? You know, they opened the idea of voting for Joe Biden. I don't know. One good piece of news for Biden recently was the No Labels third-party effort. They dropped their campaigning on the ballot in Wisconsin, their states. They had actually turned in twice as many signatures as needed to qualify for the ballot in Wisconsin, but now that will probably be dropped. But, you know, if they got on the ballot, it'd be one more thing for Joe Biden to worry about, because depending on what poll you look at, it seems to suggest that these third-party options hurt Biden a little more than Trump. Now, that's not true in every poll, and I'm generalizing here, but generally speaking, there's a thought that the more options are out there, the more it might hurt Joe Biden. So RFK Jr., Jill Stein, Cornel West, you know, if they're in the ballot in Wisconsin, that could complicate the math for Joe Biden in winning the state again.
So that's the information about the third-party vote. Back to the protest vote, what does it ultimately mean for Biden and Trump?
Maybe it's a protest vote now. Maybe it's not going to... They'll come out in November and they'll put these things aside. But there are plenty of people who are saying, I'm not going to vote for candidate X because of issue Y. And if they don't change their minds, that's a challenge for both these candidates.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for this background, JR. And thanks for joining me on Capital Notes.
Anytime.
That was JR Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com, speaking with me, WEWM's Mayan Silver. Listen for our segments every other Monday, with an extended segment on Lake Effect. and check out the Capital Notes podcast wherever you get your podcasts.